Hey there, I'm Beth Donaldson, an entrepreneur that puts hustle and heart into everything I do. The Hustle and Heart podcast will give you real and raw advice about overcoming and embracing failures, challenges, and obstacles in order to climb to the top. But it all begins with you. Listen in to each episode to harness your power and achieve more than you ever thought possible. Get ready to own it all because you deserve it. Hey there, and welcome back to the Hustle and Heart podcast for another exciting episode. Today, I have the incredible honor of hosting Howard A. Lim. Howard is the president of How Creative and a seasoned expert in branding and strategic positioning. With over 35 years of experience working with industry giants such as Apple, Disney, and HBO, Mr. Lim has developed the SIM system. This proprietary formula elevates businesses into market leaders through compelling customer experiences and profitable models. His client work has generated billions in revenue with his approach and has been featured in major publications such as the New York Times and on networks including ABC and Fox. Mr. Lim is also the author of Authentic Branding and a distinguished speaker who has trained over 100,000 business owners worldwide. I am extremely honored to welcome Howard to the podcast and discuss the foundations of building a striking brand and attracting a tribe. Welcome to the Hustle and Heart podcast, Howard. Let's go ahead and jump right in.
Sounds good to me.
Awesome. Can you start by defining what you believe constitutes a striking brand?
Yeah, a striking brand is where I feel people know who you are, what you stand for, and what makes you unique. And there's a consistency amongst your customers, your clients, or the consumer, or just in people in general. In other words, they all have a quote unquote belief or an expectation or an experience that you want to put out there that's actually matched to what you want to illustrate about your product, service, or information. So there's a match between what you're putting out there and then actually how it's being received, and therefore building the best experience you can with your customer, client, or people in general.
Awesome. Yes, definitely. So it's really creating that experience and the expectation that they can really know that they're going to receive each and every time that they purchase something from you, visit your location, and just creating that consistency, like you said. And is there any more you want to add about the striking part of just building a brand that really, really stands out?
Yeah. So what I mean by striking as well is the actual ability where it's so on par that social media and waves of people start to connect with it very quickly, because you're getting third party. You could say you're getting third party endorsements. It's not even you saying what you're saying. It's what others are now saying about what your product, service, or information means to them. And that's what I mean by striking, where it creates like a tidal wave effect and it ripples out very quickly in a shortest duration of time.
I love that. And it's like, everyone's just, it's like a magnet. Everyone wants to be a part of it.
Exactly. They want to be a part of it because they believe in it. And it really then, quote unquote, takes on its own life. And that actually belongs not just to you, but also to your tribe.
Yes. Great. So I think a big part of that too is authenticity. Can you define authenticity and branding and why it's so important?
Yeah, I wrote a book called Authentic Branding. It must be like 15 years ago now, maybe even longer, 20 years ago before branding became a known term. But what I was seeing with the different generations, we're made up of now four generations of buying power. We got the baby boomers, X, Y, and Zs. And the X and the Y, specifically the Y generation, which we call the millennials, is where you actually have it where people are basically being connected to your brand in a way that actually allows people to, quote unquote, share it with others in a very fast and rapid speed. And what I mean by that is that the authenticity of it, the heart and soul of your brand, is where people are connecting. So I remember when Enron was having problems, I knew MCI was in a crash, by the way, because it was so much about making revenue at the time. and making profit, and it was less about people. And the tides start to change because the generations that were coming up actually believed in philosophies, and they believed in actually putting their money where they actually felt the values are being connected to that brand. And so that's what I mean by the authenticity is really the heart and soul of that brand comes first, that people could feel, and they don't feel the side of what it is, in a sense that the older guard, you could say, which is all about making money. So the first connection with authentic brands is within the heart, and then it goes to the intellect of what you think about that brand.
That's great. And one of the things that I know too from branding and just businesses in general are people are really looking for that experience. And that's kind of what you're hitting on here. Not, you know, just the transaction, but the actual experience and how it makes them feel.
Exactly. There's a big switch that happened. I think really when the switch really started to happen, I know I mentioned this, but with Enron started to crash, and then you had the oil spills that were happening out in Mexico, right, with the big oil tanker. And there, people got really frustrated with how slow these big companies were responding. And they also got, people really understood that the power really was within them. And you're exactly right. What kind of experience are they leaving with people emotionally? And emotion, you could say this emotion started to click on with people, where people were really looking for an emotional aspect, their experience, not just from the intellect.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And so can you talk a little bit more about the book you wrote, Authentic Branding, and what the key message was that you hope the readers take away from it when they read that?
Yeah, some of the key takeaways is that you got to have a clear philosophy, like what you stand for. You know, that it's like what you stand for beyond making a dollar. And another key takeaway is your vision, what legacy you're leaving behind. So in addition to loving what you do, what actual ripple effect is it actually making to actually create a shift in humanity of what you're doing? And everybody matters on this planet. It's a question that becomes, how much are you contributing and having an impact? And the other key takeaway is your core message. Like, what is the message that you really want to, quote unquote, stand by and illustrate and basically build your brand around that consistency of that core message? Another component is, what are you promising your customers? In other words, like, you know, FedEx, when it came out, was absolutely positive and guaranteed overnight. That was a brand promise, which happens to be their tagline. But the point being is, like, what are they promising that differentiates them from all others? So these are just a few of the quote unquote key points of the book, and it gives you exercises of how to get there. Another key point is, what kind of culture you're going to create so you can actually attract like-minded and hearted people to your tribe. So therefore they really enjoy what they're doing as far as connecting to that vision, but they also feel like they have a higher purpose as well.
That's great. And I look forward to reading your book. So it sounds to me like it's really about embodying that culture and that vision and those core values that you as a business owner stand for, as well as your organization. And bringing that to fruition so that it builds a strong community and loyal clientele.
Exactly. The key thing is that you got to start with your positioning. Positioning is made up of everything I just mentioned above, is really like, what is your position in this world and how clear are you with your position? Believe it or not, every company that I work with, I've been doing this for 37 years. They think they're clear of who they are, what they stand for, and what difference they're gonna make with people. They have a general idea, but they're only really reaching only 25% of their potential, because a lot of them, they have never been asked the right questions to really truly figure out their positioning to reach their target market. And how is it done through authenticity?
Yes. That's great. And that's kind of scary that only 25% are living to their potential. That number is a little scary. And that just shows how much more opportunity there is for us business owners when we really connect with that vision and build a strong, strong brand. Something that's really important to me is attracting the right clientele,
because quite honestly, like, not everyone is a great fit for my med spa. You know, it's not like we're trying to attract that tribe that you talk about. And so I take great pride in that and staying connected to my vision and the mission. Can you share some examples of some brands that effectively attract and maintain a loyal tribe? And what's the secret sauce to doing that?
Okay, so that's a great question. So I've been a fan of Apple before, really. No one knew what Apple was. This is back in the 80s when they came out with the first computer. And then it actually changed my business, because without the Macintosh computer, I would not have been able to do what I've done, which is to actually shift literally a lot of industries by using the Macintosh computer to figure out things versus doing things on an analog basis. But here's the key. Apple, Steve Jobs created Apple for the creative people of mind to expand their potential, like literally. And he wanted to create a user-friendly interface that took a hell of a lot more programming, that made it so simple that it was an extension of the human experience. So in other words, that back then, between PC and Mac, PC kind of like almost had to have a degree in, you know, computer programming, because it was so unintuitive and it used so much of the left side of the brain versus the right side of the brain from the standpoint of aesthetics. Wasn't actually moving from point A to point B just by looking at the screen. I mean, it's brilliantly designed, right? So it really looked from the standpoint of how we actually respond as humans from the standpoint of emotions. And it was, that's why they came up with the friendly user interface that Steve came up with. The point being as well is that he stuck true to his philosophy, and sticking true to his philosophy, even though he got fired from his own company, he still, when he came back in, still basically rebalanced Apple to stay true to their philosophy that they're going to build quality products, okay, software product and operating system, and have it all integrated, okay, which it separates all of the PC world. In fact, the PC world hasn't figured that out just yet. And he did that. He did quality over price, okay? So he knew he wasn't going to be value driven. He was going to be price quality driven, and stuck to that. Now, what is it? The biggest company in the world, right? They own the most share than ever before, because he stuck to his philosophy. So again, you got to be very clear of your philosophy, and you got to figure out that roadmap and stay on course. Where companies don't stay on course is that when they go back to old patterns. Like, I just work with a company, which I got to get back in line with, quite honestly. We did a strategy session. It was a 2-day intensive to really figure out, you know, what's their philosophy, what's their vision, what's their mission statement, what are their goals, what do we want to build out, like their website, their brand mark, their social media. They did not stay course. They did not stay on course. And quite honestly, it's because the CEO's actually, she's a president. The president is actually in the way of this, okay? We should be so much further along as far as our clientele, as who we should be affecting to create a much bigger tribe. But because she's actually in the way of the actual plan, it's causing this bottleneck, okay? So you guys stay on course. And when companies do stay on course, that's where we get to a 10x fold. We've even done 2000x folds. And I'm not kidding about that. We got testimonials. When companies stay on track, that's where they have to take on new behaviors, new practices, and embrace the brand. It's a little bit like people are afraid to give away their baby, right? Because it's their baby, right? But you can nurture it in a new way that actually takes on better habit forming, so that it could actually grow and become more effective and reach more of their target market. And once they start to grab that and start to, you can say, adapt that new brand, that new philosophy, what happens now, it starts to change their universe, that more people start to gravitate to who they are, because now they're becoming more clear of who they are as a brand. Branding's a very complex, it's the most complex business language out there, and it's the most misunderstood. But when it works, it really works.
Yes, absolutely. And as you mentioned, just staying on track and with that vision, but also the ability to adapt and pivot and innovate as needed, as the world changes, as the business landscape changes, but still staying on track and on focus for the impact you're trying to make in the business you're trying to build, the brand.
Right, exactly. Branding is a process where marketing and PR in sales is tactical. Branding is about having the structures and the pillars to build from. And most people don't realize that. And they think, oh, we could do it overnight. Oh, that's not working. Let's move over here on this side of the table. But what they don't realize that it takes time to develop that brand where you actually are recognized in the industry and people start to recognize you for that.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. So you talked a little bit about connecting with your clients or your consumers on an emotional level. What are your thoughts on how a business can truly embody their brand identity and connect with their audience on that emotional level?
Basically, it's all about tracking the customer experience. And what I mean by that is that you got to track what's called the customer journey. When you track the customer journey is where you have the opportunity to see how you want to impact them from a lead to a close. In other words, let's use this as an example. Let's just say that let's use two examples. One is that there's a storefront, okay? And one is that you want to do things on the internet. When it comes to looking at it from the standpoint of a storefront, you want to see who you are as far as greeting your customers at the storefront. I remember I was working on this one company called WSS, and we built them up to a really big company. The point being is that who they had as a first contact point was actually a quote-unquote guard that was guarding the storefront. And guarding that storefront actually started to push people away just the way he was dressed in his uniform. So we had to change his uniform and get rid of his gun and actually have a t-shirt, a really nice polo shirt, I should say, that says, "Welcome, how can I serve you?" Okay. Then the second touch point, okay, in his customer journey is how they move through the store. And everything has to be planned accordingly. You probably heard this before, why to put the milk in the back is because then it forces the consumer to walk through the store in the aisles, right? It's the same thing when it comes to any retail store. You have to figure out the customer journey of where to go from point A to point B to point C to point D. So therefore, you're having the best experience they could possibly have all the way to the cashier, where the cashier is actually supporting them and helping them if they found anything. And it doesn't stop there, by the way. Then it moves online, because now that you capture that information, now you could actually do promotion to them that actually catered to that individual's persona, their personality, okay? So you're offering things that relate to them specifically, okay? So that's just one example when it comes to retail. If it comes to online experience, for example, when I look at a lot of like funnel systems of how they're done for marketing, or let's just take the website. Most websites, I say 99% of websites are designed totally inaccurately. So the homepage, okay, when you want to build the best experience to your target market and be able to nurture that lead, you want to have a website. The homepage is where you're actually starting off. You can think of that the homepage as being like something where it's geared towards a intro or a trailer to a movie. And what I mean by that is that the homepage should be like a trailer to a movie, which doesn't need to say everything. It just needs to say, here's the problem, here's the solution, and how we solve that makes us unique. Most websites that I see, they have like a call to action, a CTA, right off the bat, like join this newsletter or get 10% off. Or their website, there is no flow from dominant, subdominant, subordinate. In other words, everything is thrown up and in the kitchen sink on the website, on the homepage, and there's too much information. A confused buyer does not buy. Okay, so again, it's the customer journey and looking at how you create the best experience where they're not feeling like they're sold to. They feel like they're actually being educated and you're about creating an experience for them. I know that was a long answer, but there's a lot to this.
Yes, there is a lot to that. And I appreciate that because it's absolutely correct. Like even when I go on a website or it's, you know, that homepage is the first impression. And I forget the statistic, but the attention span for people when they go to a website is very short. So you have to keep them engaged and wanting to go further in the experience. And so I can imagine that that is a huge part of building a striking brand is your website and the experience of it. So I can definitely see that that is something that is important for all business owners to think about.
Yeah, exactly. So the other thing too, when it comes to building an experience, most people think about themselves first rather than a customer. In other words, they're looking through a one-way road or one-way mirror in a sense, is that they're only looking at what can we sell, not something like, not looking from the perspective of the consumer, what can they buy? So when I look at websites constantly, it's always about me. It's not about, oh, wow, it's about the customer. What difference are you making for them that they go, wow, they really get who I am. That brand really understands who I am because they're actually pushing buttons that affect me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense. And you're right. People want it to be about them, you know, the experience about them and that you actually really care and you want to find that solution for them, not about you and sell, but really connecting with them and hitting those emotional triggers.
Exactly. One of those big emotional triggers, by the way, is aspiration. Okay. Aspiration. We used to see that a lot back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Really great advertisement was based on aspirations. And some of these quote unquote ads are unforgettable because they're so brilliant that they hit that emotion of aspiration. And so people always aspire to, and most people forget that. So when you use it, when you come from an aspiration, from hitting people emotionally, aspirationally, you have a better opportunity to actually get them to basically be a customer because it's hitting the button that actually everyone is wired for, regardless of who they say they are. Underneath it all, it's based on aspirations.
Yes. Awesome. So how can businesses differentiate themselves in a crowded marketplace? I know this has a lot to do with branding and you've covered some of this, but can you talk a little bit more about really making your business and your brand stick out?
Yeah. So the first thing is like, what's your identity? So here we use our five senses, and the five senses that we use the most, 90% and more, are our eyes. We are constantly judging and evaluating every nanosecond. In other words, when you're out, let's say just walking around shopping, right? You're judging without even helping it because that's how we're designed, right? To avoid basically things that could hurt us. It's innate in us. So we're judging everything that we see, people, places, and things. So you're judging people as you're walking by them. You feel like they're judging you. It's just part of being human. There's nothing we can do about it, really. It's just how we're designed and built, okay? Well, if we use that same premise based on the way we design and the look of our brand, it's exactly the same thing. Do we want to design something that's actually weak and ugly? Or do we want to design something that's actually attractive and engaging? Okay, it's the same principles. Think of a brand like a person. It has to be dressed a particular way. It has to have a particular voice, a tone, and it has to have a deliver a message, okay? So these components that if you think like a human, we have to dress it a particular way. That means the logo, what people call a logo, I say if it's strong, it becomes a brand mark, like the Nike swoosh or Apple, right? Very strong, very flexible, universal. It's timeless. It could work in any situation, whether it's size of a diamond or billboard. It could work for embroidery. It could work in black and white. There's a lot of science when it comes to what I call building brand marks. Logos, a lot of people will design, like have their brother-in-law design or whatever it may be. But again, it's leaving an impression in that consumer's mind. And that goes with the website. That goes with the social media. Okay. that goes away, that we actually, whoever the ambassador is to the brand, how he or she speaks and actually how he or she is dressed as well. So the brand identity is literally how it wants to be seen and how it differentiates from the rest. Here's the cool thing. Most people are using desktop publishers to design their brand or graphic designer. So a desktop publisher is someone that has no experience in design, has never earned a degree in graphic design, which is a 4 years, even more. And they pick up a computer and they start using Canva. They have no sense of design. They don't know they don't know the history of fonts. They don't know the classification of fonts. They don't know the psychology of color. So they're putting all these things together based on how they feel about it. But what does that have to do with really creating a powerful brand to track? Okay. Most people are doing this way. Now let's go to the next level up, graphic designers. Graphic designers, yes, they're trained in school, but usually they're trained on one media, like to say website, package design, product design. Great, fantastic. Okay, that will get you further ahead than someone that's doing desktop publishing where they don't have any experience. But graphic design is still not enough. You need to work with someone that does brand designing. Brand designing can ensure that your identity, everything has one single look and feel, your look and feel, your signature look and feel, consistency, not beyond colors or beyond font. I'm talking about how it actually feels and how it looks. Like Apple products, for example. All Apple products are based on minimalist design. You can't get any simpler of a shape than what they've created for their iPhone, for their MacBook Mini, for the MacBook Pro. All of it's designed from the standpoint of philosophy, minimum design, so it's timeless, okay? So if you see an Apple phone, an iPhone, and you see a Mac Mini, you already make the connection. It's coming from the same company because there's a certain look and feel that's similar. That's what I'm talking about when I say a strong brand identity. And a brand, someone that does brand design is someone that has multiple experience and has multiple disciplines in all these different areas. Product designing, billboard designing, website designing, package design. It takes usually about 15 years to master. But once you master all these different disciplines, then you can adhere and make sure the team is adhering to one specific look. Your website, your social media, the product that you're selling, if you're doing private labeling, everything has a very powerful look that then it's unmistakably undeniable as far as what that brand is and what it means and how recognizable it is. That was what brings what's called brand awareness.
Yes, that is wonderful. And you're speaking my language because, of course, I'm in aesthetics, but also the aesthetics of your brand is so important and the cohesiveness of it from, like you said, whether it's private labeling or your website, like, you know that that is that particular brand because it's cohesive, it's consistent, and aesthetically pleasing.
Exactly. So again, most people don't do this. And so there's big opportunities for companies that do. Because why? There's more products and services than ever before. More. The space is so crowded. I remember in the old days, you know, you go down a cereal aisle, you might see like five different types of cereals. Now look at all the different hundreds of drinks that are out there. Remember, it was just basically one water that was out there, bottled water. What was the brand? Arrowhead or whatever it was. Now look at all the shelves are filled with all different brands of water. How are you planning to stand out? You got to differentiate. And when it comes to packaging, by the way, your packaging is your brand, is a huge part of your brand identity. So it better stand out, like what you know, let's say like Red Bull did with their cans. They made them smaller. That was revolutionary. Okay, everyone's using the standard size. And just doing that, just by the size, had them stand out. And that brand took off. Now they had to deliver on what it said, right? Which you get a lot more energy from the drink, right? But really it delivered on two things, what it was promising and how it stood out from all the other quote unquote brands that were in cans.
Yeah, absolutely. That's super cool. And when I think of even the energy drinks, Monster has a larger can.
Right.
They're a successful brand too. That's cool. I know you talked a little bit about this earlier in our conversation, but let's dig deeper. What do you feel are the biggest branding mistakes that you see businesses make?
First of all, one of the biggest mistakes is that they think branding is the same as marketing. And so they don't understand they're hiring graphic designers, desktop publishers to design their brand when actually it's not, they're not designing, actually they are designing a brand, because a brand is, there's made up of three parts. There's called the brand image, which resides in the mind and the heart of the customer. And if you're saying that you're, you know, on a 10-point scale, you're a 10, right? 10 being best. And your brand image, your brand identity, like we talked about, the website is like a 2 or 3. It looks like it's designed by a hobbyist or an amateur. You're never going to be able to reach your target market. And not only that, it's going to make it much more difficult to actually yield a target market. So when it comes to the standpoint of looking from the standpoint of making big mistakes, it's not aligning your core values, your core position with your identity that's now matched to your ideal customer and create an image in their mind. So in other words, most companies are lacking a strategy. Okay, they're going tactical, tactical, tactical. Remember, branding's about the long haul. So what is the vision? What's the philosophy? What's the brand promise? What do you stand for? How do you differentiate? Okay, these strategies usually take 2 or 3 days. They're very intense. But what they do, again, is they're the pillars, they're the DNA to the brand. So the first thing that's missing in most companies, they don't even have a plan, okay? The second thing is that, again, they're letting their graphic designer, desktop publisher design their brand without knowing that they're not designing a brand. They're actually, they are designing a brand. They're designing a brand and have a very a strong limiter on it. In other words, maybe 10%, 25% of their potential. The third component to this is that why companies make big, huge branding mistakes is they don't have what's called a brand manager for continuous growth and scaling of the brand. They're usually just like figuring out, let's say, with a business strategist, which is important, but the business strategist is not looking at how this is impacting the brand. So when a company is trying to grow and expand, they're leaving, quote unquote, a lot of components that made them successful to begin with. They're leaving all those components behind because those are never part of the strategy. I know there's a lot why companies fail and make big branding mistakes, but again, it's a lack of strategy, a lack of a right identity, and a lack of management.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, even as I think of some brands, especially with small businesses that are wanting to scale, you know, they're all over the place and it's not cohesive. There's not consistency with a lot of it. And I think you're right. A lot of people kind of categorize marketing and branding all in the same thing, which I do think they work together, obviously, for, you know, purposes of attracting the right tribe. But branding is a big part of the vision and the alignment of everything to make it come together.
Exactly, exactly. So, and a reason why it's dangerous to have what I call in my book, the Sybil effect, where you look like all different types of identities, is now you look like all different types of companies that you lose your strength in the market. And it also starts to become a liability, what's called brand equity. Brand equity is when you stay true to one core, exactly, and everything aligns to that core of what you stand for. What happens is that you're building the brand equity. Brand equity is tangible, intangible. Intangible would be the expectation, experience that people are feeling, okay, by that brand. The tangible part would be like the look and feel. And a lot of it gets trademarked, by the way. Like the name, for example, of a company should be trademarked, because that actually is a part of what's called brand equity that actually shifts and actually leverages what's called brand value. Brand value is the value of the company. If you sold a company today, brand equity is actually what influences brand value.
Well, I'm glad you brought up trademark, because that was one of my biggest failures as a new business owner, where I actually had a name change in the beginning, a couple months before we opened, but after I had a lot of branding done and a lot of marketing, because I was served a cease and desist letter due to someone else having a trademark on the name that I had originally chosen. So Skin Bee Med Spa was renamed before we opened. So we also trademarked Body by Bee, which is our body and weight loss pillar of our business, and even trademarking the marks of our logo and all of that. It's so important. So I learned that lesson early on. So that's really cool that you're talking about trademark and how important that is with branding and building a strong, striking brand.
Yeah, exactly. Trademarking is so overlooked, and patenting, by the way, too, if you have a product. And the good thing, Beth, is that you did this before you started your company. I often work with companies. I go, did you trademark your name? And they might have been in business for 10 or 15 years. And then you find out they're actually encroaching on another brand. This is that, thank God they have not been sued. So then they had to basically rebuild their brand awareness of who they are to all their followers.
Yes, I'm thankful and grateful for it. And when I look back, that was a failure that I overcame. And, you know, the name that I chose, it all comes together when we make those failures in businesses and we pivot as needed. But I am grateful that it happened before we opened and I had to completely rebrand in the middle. But definitely trademark is a very, very important thing that business owners should definitely execute.
You really need to look at your name. By the way, when it comes to trademark, it's not the first to trademark with the government. It's the first to show use. So let's just say that that company, I'm just making this up, but let's say that company is trying to create a cease and desist. And let's say that you had been in business for, let's say, 5 years. And then let's say they're in business for 1 year, but they happen to get, quote unquote, the trademark because you never filed. But if you show proof that you actually had a trademark created for public consumption 4 years earlier, that you would actually get the trademark if you fought for it.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. I learned that from my attorney too. Yep. Absolutely. And that's why it's important too, to do the trademark even before, because it is a process to have it actually registered and approved. So to start doing the trademark.
Yeah, exactly. So that way you have things, because again, branding is about the long haul of how much equity could build over time. And at that point, it becomes like compound interest.
Yeah, pretty cool. Okay, so tell us some key components of a brand strategy that every business should have.
The key components that every business should have is, first of all, what is your philosophy? Okay, so this may sound a little redundant, but it's really important as well. So what is your philosophy? Why do you exist as a business to begin with? The second component would be like, what's your vision? What legacy do you want to leave behind? So that way it drives you, inspires you to get up every morning because you know your brand and your business is much bigger than you, okay? Another key component are your values, your key values. There's usually five of them, like, you know, co-creation, co-creating with others, integrity, honesty, hard work, playfulness, friendliness. These are all quote unquote values, but you have to define each value too to your culture that you're creating. This helps with HR, by the way, so they're hiring the right people, because if you hire someone that doesn't align with his culture, it's gonna make it very difficult to keep advancing the company forward because the company's made up of people.
Okay? Yeah. And the people are everything. And I love that you're hitting on the core values, because I just realigned my core values over the last year. And the acronym is LEADERS, which stands for Level Up, Excellence, Achieve, Diversity, Empathy, Relationships, and Strength. And so we truly make every decision in the business, both with clients, hiring, our, you know, bringing on talent and business decisions through those core values. And that's really what keeps us grounded and committed to the vision and the mission and the brand.
Exactly. That goes back to the realignment that I was talking about, the management. So you're doing it, which is great. You're looking at where things could be misaligned and re-examine. I do it every year with my company. Every year I'm readjusting. Okay, or manage it for growth. A lot of it's a management for growth connected to my business model, but that's another topic. But the point being is that you're doing a good job to find out where things are aligned, where things are misaligned. Because the more that you have things aligned, quote unquote, and taking that straight line approach, the more opportunity for growth.
Yes, alignment is so important. And earlier you even hit on how brands should really define themselves as a person. Like, who would your brand be if it was a person? And it's so interesting that you said that, because I sat down with my creative director and our brand presentation that we go over with all new employees, and we revisit it all the time and, you know, add to it every year and review it. But we literally wrote down who we are as a person. You know, we're bold. We are empathetic. We are a vibe. It's so cool that you said that, because coming from an expert like you in branding and knowing that we are doing really cool things with making sure that our brand is strong and attracting the right tribe, it's just cool to hear it from an expert like you that that's something that you should do with your brand.
Yeah, exactly. When you're clear about your brand, you're clear on its identity, and you're clear on your message. By the way, another key component too is your core message. You have absolutely the opportunity to influence who you really want as your customer. Absolutely.
Great. Okay, so tell me, what role does community engagement play in attracting a tribe around your brand?
So it's really good when brands, and I'm saying authentically, not jumping on the bandwagon, where they actually care about the community, where they, and that should be tied in, by the way, to their philosophy and their vision. That's why it's so important to work on the philosophy and vision first. The reason for that is because it creates a much bigger orbit than you originally thought of. It's much more than just your business, in other words. It's about community, and we're about people, right? We're made up of people. So when it comes to actually having it, making a difference in a community, what happens is that people start to feel that. It's kind of like, you know, Susan Cormick, when it comes to the breast cancer and how that actually influenced the NFL. And now you see people in the NFL like wearing pink socks because they're saying, we believe in what she stands for, and our brand is aligned to that brand. That's how powerful it could be. So it's really powerful knowing the difference that you can make by actually having and leveraging in your community, but also knowing who you could actually partner with. And when you start partnering with other quote unquote organizations that are out there and help, and it's all about helping out people, what happens is that you have great, what's called brand associations. The other thing that's really powerful as well is that now people are actually bringing, this is a beautiful thing. Now people are bringing things from their tribe, and you're bringing for your tribe of members of both tribes you never have before, because you just doubled it because of these partnerships. You see how beautiful that is?
So powerful. I love it. Yes. And we do the community outreach too. We just actually got a new community partnership that we're super proud of. So that's something we focus on too. And focusing on just building that strong community, because we all want to be in, you know, communities that align with our personal values and values of our organizations. So community is huge in building that brand. How do you see the future of branding evolving over the next few years?
Well, I'm doing it already. AI.
AI. That's so funny that you say that. My last podcast episode, I'm not sure if you listened to it, but it was all about AI. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So let me just talk about what AI cannot do, because it could do a lot, believe me. But it cannot be creative. It doesn't use imagination.
You're exactly right. That's one of the things we talked about, how I think AI is so powerful for a lot of the things. And I can't wait to hear how you expand on what you're saying. But also, it doesn't replace, it cannot replace the imagination like you're saying, or be the thing that builds that strong brand, in my opinion.
Exactly. So here, what AI is most powerful, I could say, who are the most powerful people that can utilize AI? Creative people. because it's all about what you probably heard is a prompt engineering, right? Is what quality questions do you put in there to get quality answers? Most people are not putting in quality questions, so they're getting somewhat answers, right? So the more that you actually, it's kind of like being an art director or creative director, you know, where you're actually visualizing the scene and then you're directing it, right? And the more you direct it and the more finesse you have with that direction, the better result you're going to get as far as a result, as far as an answer or dialogue. So in other words, okay, so let me just give you an example. So for example, there's 12 archetypes, right, when it comes to a brand. And I was just working with a client and his was actually three of them because it gets kind of complicated. Because what I create or what are the ingredient, what's an ingredient brand, okay? And what is the overall brand, but there's always an ingredient brand. And the two of them were different from one another, kind of like a family member. Like the father was different than the daughter, you could say. And the daughter had its own personality, but there was this, the philosophy what tied the two together. But when it comes to actually introducing them as separate brands to the public, we have to be very careful of what type of brand are they really representing. For example, one of the brands was the hero brand, and then we figured out its personality traits, right? And with those personality traits and it being the hero brand, now basically how I work with AI is orchestrating like, well, what should it say? What should it read? What should it, how, what would be the persona? What, and by the way, here's our target market. How would it approach the target market? And what would be the best approaches to that target market based on being a hero brand, okay? By the way, here are our medias that we're using or we're thinking and considering using. Which media do we feel would be best based on the target market, based on our quote-unquote characteristic to persona of the brand? You see how I'm doing this? I'm going back and forth and I'm getting more and more deeper and deeper and deeper to figure out what would be the perfect formula that I could actually take from my own personal experience of building brands and how it's actually given me other additional options and opportunities I didn't even consider.
Incredible.
So I can work on like the characteristic of a brand and then look at, okay, like an art director again, like even like a movie, right? You have the lights, you've got the characters, meaning the actors, you have basically also the location, you have the time of the day, is it nighttime, daytime? All that has to be taken into consideration. So the better you are as a creative director, the more you're gonna be able to finesse your answers. Does that make sense?
Yes, makes total sense. That is great.
So that's what gives you, quote unquote, you could say the atmosphere, the environment for that brand, but also gives you direction of how you want to build the brand as well. So it's kind of cool because it's giving you scenarios in the future and you can reverse engineer from it and you can take all these data points that really make sense from the strategy session and it starts building that world from the standpoint of, in words for now. The design still has a long ways to go using, I'm using a bunch of AI stuff, but the design has a ways to go. Believe me, it doesn't come close to what's possible for a really trained eye human, but it can give you different scenarios, but they're okay. But when it comes to copy, oh my goodness, I really like it a lot when it comes to copy and figuring out math situations as well, like math equation. It helps me a lot with math equations.
Yes. So as we wrap up, what is the one key takeaway you want the listeners to remember from this conversation?
I'd say the one key takeaway is to examine your own brand. And do you feel as it's as the potential? Here's what I would say. In your space, pick the three biggest brands that you aspire to. Okay, in your space, dissect their websites of what their strength, what's unique about them, and what are their weakness, and how do you differentiate from them? So the biggest thing when it comes to branding is uniqueness. You probably heard of SWOT analysis. Those are okay, strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. We created what's called something that's much stronger in my opinion, which is looking at the strength and weaknesses, but what's unique? What you wanna look at is the uniqueness. So what you wanna do is like literally use like Word or whatever program you wanna use, but put in those three quote unquote webs, three companies that you aspire to, that your company, your brand aspires to, and you wanna look at how they're being constructed, what makes them unique, what their strengths and weaknesses are. And then what you want to do is then now use your brand and compare it to these brands. And the biggest area that you want to focus on is the uniqueness. What is it that you could do unique that's different from these other companies that actually you know will make an impact for your customers that want that uniqueness?
Yes, building that striking business to attract that tribe.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's awesome. Well, Howard, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. Your insights into branding and community building are invaluable. To our listeners, remember that building a striking brand is not just about your logos and slogans. It's about your authenticity, the connections, and attracting the right tribe. Until next time, keep hustling with heart.
There you have it. Another episode of Hustle and Heart. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your app and connect with me on social media so you don't miss a beat. I'll see you next time on the Hustle and Heart podcast.